30-something seems to be the kind of program that elicits very ambivalent responses. That ambivalence was best summed up by our TV critic, David Bianculli, when he said there's no other show he likes less that he watches more. On the other hand, a lot of people watch 30-something because they think it describes the day-to-day ups and downs of life better than anything else on TV. Last Tuesday, the show returned from a hiatus, and Ellen got married. On the next show, one of the minor characters will find out he tests positive for the HIV virus. This episode was co-written by my guest Richard Kramer, who's been with the show from the start and is now a producer. My other guest, Winnie Holtzman, wrote the recent episodes about Melissa's gallery opening and the bachelor parties for Ellen and Billy. Shows by Kramer and Holtzman are included in a new book of scripts from 30-something called 30-something Stories. Some TV shows have what they call a Bible, which describes the style, structure, and feel of the show. I asked Holtzman if she was given a Bible when she joined the writing staff.
We don't have a Bible, per se, on 30-something. This is sort of stored in Marshall and Ed's brain in the sense of where they're planning to take the show. And everyone kind of who needs to know about that knows about it. When I was first assigned, yes, I was given an episode. Meaning, you know, we want Polly to have this affair. We want Ellen to have this affair with a married man, and we want her to get, you know, in over her head. And that was how it started. And then from that came many, many conversations, which I participated in. So,
Were there any guidelines you were given about, you know, how many plots you had to work into one episode, or how much can happen to one character in an episode? Are there certain rules of thumb that, you know, the writers are expected to follow to make episodes conform with each other in terms of feel or sensibility?
Can I answer that one?
Sure.
I think that we regard the episodic form, really as like that of a short story, and that the emotional ground that it covers in the space of the 46-minute hour, which is what one of our episodes runs, tracks a fundamental change in attitude that the main character undergoes, that you see them believing something very deeply at the beginning of a show, and then by the end, that attitude has been thrown into question and is just at the point where it is starting to change. And, you know, our stories really tend ultimately, even ones that have subplots, to focus on one person and to follow that one person's change in how they view the world.
Winnie, let me ask you to describe the episode that you've had reprinted in the 30-something Stories book and why you chose that episode.
Gary and Susanna are having some money problems, are feeling a pinch at the same time that Michael and Hope are prospering. And basically the episode is about what this does to their respective relationships. And specifically, it was really about Gary feeling less than his friend and having to cope with that and what that does to a friendship.
Now, is that a storyline you were assigned or one that you came up with?
Well, you see, it's interesting. Again, I was assigned it and I came up with it. If you can try to picture the way we do things, you might be given a sentence. You might have Marshall and Ed say, "We want Gary to have money problems. We want Gary and Michael to have problems about money." That's one sentence. From there, a whole show's going to spring. And I would have many, many conversations. I mean, I would have 3 or 4 Marshall and Ed conversations that I would participate in before I would set down pen to paper.
What about talking with the actors on the show? Do you talk with them when you're doing a script, too?
No, I don't.
Afterwards is when they tend to have the most to say. You know, we will finish a draft of a script, and then once they read it, they tend to become excited and interested and have their own feedback. Our particular cast is extremely articulate, for the most part trained in the theater, able to break down and interpret a script. And we have really, you know, I think benefited from that.
Richard, let me ask you to describe the episode that you have reprinted in the book.
Oh, sure. excuse me. That episode follows two stories. It follows the story of Melissa and her younger boyfriend, Lee, and Melissa's friend, Russell, and a relationship he has with a man who works in Michael's office. And the stories are really parallel experiences for the two couples because they both deal with, in this case, Melissa's and Russell's internalized self-judgment and how they use that to prevent themselves from making connections in the world.
There's a scene where Russell and Peter are in bed together.
Yes.
And what you have written in the script as a stage direction is they move closer into each other's arms. So how much do you see of that and when did the camera cut? I mean, what kinds of discussions were there about what you'd be allowed to show on television in that
scene? There were no discussions. I mean, it was just we were dealt with, you know, by the network, by the actors, by everybody as if we were mature, responsible adults. Nobody ever once on 30-something has said, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. They trust us as creative people. That's why we are given the mandate to do the show.
There are no censors anymore or standards and practices?
There are standards and practices, people. They tend to function mostly around questions of language. And, you know, you just internalize what words you can and cannot say. I wonder what you think about this, Wendy, but I don't find the standards and practices notes particularly irksome. I find them more comic.
For me, it hasn't really been a problem. It's been more of a challenge to find other ways to say what you can't say on TV.
Richard, you said you found the standards and practices notes more comic than anything else. Can you give an example of specific notes that you thought were pretty funny, unintentionally funny?
Yes. The show was quite frank about issues of sex and sexuality. And there was a scene where Melissa was describing what it was like to be in bed with Lee, her younger lover, to Hope. And I wanted her to reach a point of inarticulacy that the two women would understand and not have to be explicated beyond that point. And the line that I wrote for Melanie Mayron to give was something like this. It was, and when I'm with him and he's inside me, and then I had a trailing off with three dots and was going to let Hope and correspondingly the audience fill in the blanks. And this became a subject of enormous worry to the standards and practices people because it implied that they were actually sleeping together. And their suggestion to lessen their pain was that the line be changed or looped, which is a word added after you shoot, to when I'm with him and he's inside my apartment.
Yeah, that doesn't quite get it, does it?
Not quite the same thing.
It's a little different.
Well, how did you resolve that one?
We won.
Did you really?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what kind of argument did you make in support of the language you wanted to use?
We just said, leave us alone. And then, you know, it's censorship in television, it's a complex negotiation. You know what you want to fight for and you know what's less important to fight for. We wanted to establish in that show, as in the series as a whole, a general maturity and level of frankness when talking about issues like this. And, you know, we had the precedent of doing that, and that's what we were able to stand on.
I want to get back to something we were talking about before, which is the episode about Russell and Peter.
Now,
I had read that this episode was, some sponsors were upset by it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's correct.
What was their response?
These sponsors were reacting to the pressure of certain fundamentalist, organized viewer watchdog groups who have a highly organized mailing list that inundates the people on their mailing list with lists of television shows and films that they find unacceptable for their membership. These people are then asked to write to advertisers who sponsor these shows saying that they were offended morally and that they will withdraw their support for their product. Advertisers seem to be very sensitive to this. And the Strangers episode of 30-something was a perfect example of presenting a way of living that was not acceptable to these people.
When viewers wrote to the sponsors, what was the sponsor's reaction to the show? Did the sponsors feel very threatened?
Certain sponsors withdrew their support.
Since viewers couldn't respond to the show till after it was broadcast, what did the sponsors withdraw from? Other episodes?
They withdrew from rerunning it. What the press does not report is that when they say we are inundated with negative letters, we are much more inundated with positive letters. I mean, I would say that the number of letters that were positive about Strangers and other shows on other subjects we have done is at least 10 to 1. And the press does not report that. And I believe that that perpetuates a prejudice that you cannot deal with mature, adult, humanistic programming on primetime television because certain people are going to say, we don't want to see it. Many people do want to see it. They just are not as well organized in making themselves known to the media.
You know, to some people, the show 30-something signifies baby boom middle class self-absorption. You know, the word 30-something has almost become shorthand for a certain kind of self-absorption among people who don't like the show. How does that make you feel?
I think we've stopped defending ourselves. You know, I mean, our attitude right now is if they don't get it, there's other things on television to watch. We have never accepted or believed what our critics said about us because we're human. You know, I mean, we have never felt that we were whining, self-absorbed, a ripoff of The Big Chill. We were just writing about these seven people in this, you know, in Philadelphia who were having these problems and some days were better than others. And we were reflecting, to some degree, our own experience. I think a careful viewing of the show will show that they are not obsessed with material things. That they share a common purpose in life, which is how to live decently in a difficult world.
The show started in 1986 or 87.
87.
87, and that means that the characters are about 4 years older than they were when it started.
Yeah.
Are some of them turning 40? Is this the kind of thing that concerns you, that they'll be 40-something soon?
Well, you have to remember that television time is different than real time.
I know, like kids say in high school, in the high school series, for decades.
I know. Well, see, in our minds, we're still back in 1987. So they are 30-something forever.
Thank you both very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Richard Kramer and Winnie Holtzman write for the TV show 30-something. Their work is included in a new book of scripts from the show called 30-something Stories. This is Fresh Air.